Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the broadcast. I'm Tracy McClure with you over the next half hour. Coming up today, September 4th, 2016, the canonization of Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta. We present a special full-length feature on the Church's latest saint and speak to the postulator of her cause for sainthood, who explains why she believed she may one day be a saint of darkness.
I feel if the world today turns its back to the poor, I think they are turning their back to Christ.
The voice there of Mother Teresa of Calcutta, who dedicated her life to the poor, the sick, and the dying.
The work is only a means to put our love for Christ into action. And so I had only to change the way of work, the means I had to change, to work for the poorest of the poor. So my vocation was a continuation of belonging to Christ and being only His.
Founder of the Missionaries of Charity Order, Mother Teresa was one of the world's best-known and loved religious figures. Throughout her long life, she was revered for her holiness and her compassion towards the poorest of the poor, and was often known as the Saint of the Gutters. She received numerous awards for her work, including the Nobel Peace Prize in 1979. Mother Teresa died on September 5, 1997, at the age of 87. Her canonization on September 4, 2016, follows her beatification in 2003. Mother Teresa was unstinting in her charity work on behalf of the poor in nations like India, but she also often voiced her concern about what she called the spiritual poverty of the richer Western world.
There is two kinds of poverty. We have the poverty of material, like for example, in some places like in India and Ethiopia and Yemen, other places, where the people are hungry for a loaf of bread, a real hunger. But there is much deeper, much greater hunger, and that is the hunger for love. And that terrible loneliness and being unwanted, unloved, being abandoned by everybody.
In a talk she once gave, Mother Teresa gave this eloquent and moving description of her feelings after visiting an old people's home in England, where nobody lacked for material comforts, but what they did lack was something far more precious and elusive.
I visited a home, one of the best homes in England. Our sisters are there working. I have never seen so much wonderful things in a home like I saw in that home. And yet, there was not a single smile on the faces of those people. All these old people, they were all looking towards the door. And I asked the sister in charge, and I said, Sister, why are they like that? Why are they not smiling? I'm so used to see smiles on people's faces because I think smile generates smiles, just as love generates love. And then she said, this is every day like that. They're always waiting for somebody to come and visit them. The loneliness is eating them up. And for days after days, they keep on looking. Nobody turns up. That unwantedness is great poverty.
Ten years after her death, a book containing a collection of Mother Teresa's letters was published, revealing for the first time the astonishing truth of how she spent many decades struggling with doubts about her faith and the existence of Jesus. Entitled Mother Teresa, Come Be My Light, the book was edited and compiled by Father Brian Koledichuk, a Missionaries of Charity father who worked closely with her for 20 years. He's also the postulator for her sainthood cause. Father Brian is convinced that these surprising revelations about Mother Teresa's spiritual darkness make her even more saintly and heroic. He sat down with me ahead of Mother Teresa's canonization, and I put to him this question.
I'd like to start with this. If I ever become a saint, I will surely be one of darkness. Now, Mother Teresa said that, and to hear it actually gives me goosebumps. Firstly, because she had a premonition about her own sainthood, and secondly, to be a saint of darkness sounds rather spooky.
Right.
What did she mean by those words? And she also said she would be absent from heaven. That's a really devastating thought. What did she mean?
Okay, that's like Saint Therese would have kind of said, or her heavenly mission statement. I think this is Mother Teresa's mission statement of what she will be doing when she, as she used to say, goes home to God. And from the letters that we discovered when we began collecting the documents that were published Come Be My Light, to the surprise, if not shock, of everyone, even the sisters closest to Mother Teresa, we discovered that her interior experience was what she called the darkness, and that, remember, she's a woman passionately in love with Jesus, wants to love him as he has never been loved before. And then her experience is, after she has experienced this real contemplative prayer, real union with Jesus, 15 years after the fact, she'll write to one priest, Father Neuner, "Jesus simply gave himself to me to the full. Oh, the sweetness, the union of that time passed but too soon." Her experience is that she's feeling unloved, unwanted by Jesus. She feels that she cannot love Jesus as she wants to love him, as she's never been loved before, which is a daring resolution to even make if you're taking it seriously. So all of us were assuming that, you know, being Mother Teresa wasn't easy, and that, you know, you're always on just to guide a growing congregation of 4,000 sisters, never mind all the other things that are demands made on you. Mother, go here, go there. Can you receive this award? Can you speak there? And there's a problem over there. From 4:40 in the morning until late at night. So we would have thought at least she's enjoying this great consolation, this union with Jesus that gives her the energy to keep going day after day. And then we discover quite the contrary, and it just makes her life so much more heroic that she lived, just in pure and naked faith, not that she experienced any of this consolation. And that was her experience. So she's a saint of darkness because that's what she was going through. And also we need to understand it because she would say, once she left India, she and the sisters, then she discovered, as she would say, the greatest poverty in the world today is to be unloved, unwanted, and uncared for. So just like living poorly, as the poor do, she was identified with, in solidarity with, the materially poor. She is also in solidarity with now this spiritual poverty, which could be anyone from any category, rich, middle class, anyone could, and maybe perhaps all of us in some degree, at some point, feel unloved, unwanted, uncared for. So she's living in this spiritual poverty. So that's why I think her mission statement, I will be absent from heaven, because she'll be concerned for those who are living in this darkness of being this spiritual poverty and being unloved, unwanted, uncared for. And she will be with them to help them as she did as she was on earth. For example, in Calcutta, after Mass, or people would come visit, and it would be on the balcony on the second floor. And so she would sit there, and God knows the horror stories she might have heard of people opening their hearts to her. And so she has this great compassion and empathy because she herself was experiencing this kind of, this real sense of being unloved, lonely, uncared for. And so she was able to, I think, also give a word of consolation and help to these people because she knew what they were going through.
The darkness in her soul was in a special way manifested during the year that she had to undergo an operation.
The late Archbishop Henry de Souza of Calcutta knew Mother Teresa well. He was here in Rome for her beatification in 2003 and told us he got a peek into the darkness that tormented Mother Teresa's soul when the two were, by chance, patients in the same hospital some years before.
She and I were in the same hospital. I had to undergo the same operation of an angioplast, which she had. And I had it the day before, she had it the day after. The same doctor, Dr. Patricia, did it on me, did it on her. And I recovered immediately. And she seemed perfectly well after the operation, during the day. But during the night, she struggled, she was restless, was pulling the tubes. And there was no explanation as to what was happening. So after 2 days of struggle of this type, physical restlessness which she experienced, Dr. Patricia came to ask me what was my advice. She said, I don't see any physical reason for her, this inquietude, for this kind of restlessness. And the tablets and medicine don't seem to work. And during the day, she's perfectly all right. Why should it happen at night? Knowing from the lives of saints that saints are usually troubled by the devil, at times when they are physically frail, weak, or enfeebled, that's the time when the devil does his best to enter into the mind. The devil cannot enter into the heart. He can only touch the body, if at all. And so I immediately said, it could be the devil that is troubling her. And so I immediately thought of Father Strozio, who was a very holy man, and a Salesian. He was 80 years of age. And he was known to Mother Teresa as a regular confessor of the sisters. I thought of him and I said, well, Father Strozio could go and give her a blessing, reading the prayer of exorcism. The prayer of exorcism is found in the baptismal formula, in which when a person is baptized, the priest prays that the devil does not trouble the person, that the devil stays away, and that now this is a child of God, and so on. I told him, read that prayer, O Mother, and see what will happen. And he came, he was quite happy. In fact, he asked me, when I'm going to say that prayer, if the devil should say to me something, what will I answer? So I said to him, well, you say, I am commanding you by the authority of the Church given to me by the Archbishop of Calcutta to leave Mother Teresa in peace. Okay, he said, and he went. It was very interesting because when he came back, he told me the story. He said, you know, I told Mother I'm going to say this prayer to ask the devil to stay away from you. And Mother was very happy. And she said, yes, yes, do that, do that. And then he started the prayer with the sign of the cross, and Mother made the sign of the cross. And he said the prayer loud, in which he was commanding Satan to leave Mother in peace. And Mother was praying with him very, very happily. And at the end, Mother was very delighted, said thank you. And Father Strozio came away and told me the story. And I said to him, well, Father, why don't you stay behind? And at night, in case trouble takes place, you are there. He said, no, I don't think any trouble will be there tonight. In case of need, you call me. And in fact, it happened that Mother slept that first night so well, and the devil did not trouble her. What then was the darkness which she suffered? What were the special reasons for that restlessness during the night? I must say, I never asked her. But somebody once who had been close to her, when he heard about this and he heard what I had done, that person came to tell me, you know, Bishop, this was not the only time. Many times she has confided to him, pray for me. I often get very troubled by temptations that the devil puts before me, thinking that my work has been useless, that I have been misled in what I did, and that perhaps I had ulterior motives for doing what I had done. And he prayed much for her. And I begin now to see that she probably had a lot of darkness. And those who have now studied her letters would probably testify to the fact that during those hours of darkness, she surrendered herself to God and had to live a life of deep faith. How and what that darkness was, I cannot say. I have not read the letters, nor do I know. But I'm sure that they would have concerned the many hostile remarks which were made against her towards the end of her life, about the work she did, the motives she had, and so on.
And from Archbishop D'Souza back to Father Brian now, I asked him if Mother Teresa were around today, what would she have said if she knew that she would indeed be made a saint?
Well, I think that, you know, she was innocent and pure, but she wasn't stupid or naive. So I think that she had a sense that, you know, in the news conference, a journalist would ask, well, Mother Teresa, what do you think people call you, a living saint? And then she would say, well, you shouldn't be, or we shouldn't be, or you shouldn't be surprised if you see Jesus in me, because it's an obligation for all of us to be holy.
But not all of us can be saints.
Not all of us are going to be like Mother Teresa. No, not canonized. So, yeah, I think she must have had some sense that she would be. But that said, I think one of her other outstanding virtues is humility. Because she was one of the most admired women in the 20th century, not just in the church. I think not since St. Francis of Assisi did someone have that echo outside the church. Of course, we have other great saints, but that has that kind of echo. And even in the culture, you'll see in a movie or in a book or something, someone will say, well, who do you think I am, Mother Teresa? So that, you know, they have a sense that you just identify Mother Teresa with goodness, kindness, charity, and, well, if we're not there, well, then who do you think I am?
But she was also a tough lady.
Her character was very strong personality.
And I mean, when you knew her very well, did you ever have to smile, for example, when she was talking to the local plumber or maybe to a great name politician or world leader?
Well, she had this knack of being able to be both firm and to really say the truth or to be insistent when she needed to be, but at the same time in a very loving way. It was very difficult to refuse Mother Teresa when she would go and ask for this, that, and the other thing. Even right from the beginning, actually, when she was in Loreto and the first followers were all students of hers, minus one. She was very demanding with herself, but and also them. And she had to mold these 12 young women into what became a congregation of 4,000 people. So she was very demanding, tough, but at the same time loving, which is a kind of a difficult combination to do because probably we tend to be more one side to the other side. But that's part of heroic virtue, is to have seemingly contrary virtues like courage and humility. The saints have to live all of those virtues to a heroic degree, or at least the capacity to live them if they're demanded in the situation.
Did you feel you were up to the task of becoming postulator? I mean, it just sounds like you were saying before that 17 volumes of testimonies from witnesses, you've got 450 pages in each volume.
Oh, that's only 17, but the bulk of it is the documents. We had 81 volumes. So that after Mother Teresa's death, the Archbishop of Calcutta went to the Congregation for Saints and asked about starting the cause. And they said, well, hold on, she just died a month ago. But they said, well, start a commission, work on the documents, gather testimony perhaps of people who may not be living 5 years from now. And so he established a commission of two sisters and myself. And of course,
this was also something wanted by Pope John Paul II.
Oh, yeah. No, that's why. When I was taking the course, the studium offered by the Congregation for Saints, and in the middle of that course is when they told us that the Holy Father was making the first exception to that norm of waiting for 5 years. And so then the question was, well, who's the postulator? And so myself and one of the other sisters of that little committee, we went here and we asked there, and then we went to the Jesuits, Father Molinari, and then Father Gumpel was with him. And they were very gracious and noble, and they said, no, we won't do it. It would have been a great thing. No, oh, we're going to have the cause of Mother Teresa. And then they said, no, it should be one of you, because you're presenting a charism, and it's important that you're living the same charism, so you know what you're from the inside, as it were, what it is. We'll help you, but it should be one of you. So when that was said, then they took a risk on getting this green postulator who had no experience, but with the help of Father Molinari and Gumpel, and then in the congregation itself, we had Monsignor Sarno, who was a great help. Even there, I did say, well, one step at a time. I'm not going to think of the whole thing because it would be overwhelming. So just, okay, step one, we'll do that. Step two, we'll do that. When we do that, then we'll get to the next one. So it's like living the present moment. No? It's just we do today's task with the grace of God, and we'll worry about the next one tomorrow.
So what surprised you in this whole process? Did something leap out at you and say, oh, wait a minute, I didn't know anything about that?
Well, sometimes I say, you know, I had my piece of the pie. And I had my experience, and it was like an outside insider, inside but outside, because, you know, we didn't live in the convent with the sisters, of course, but we were still insiders. So that was one perspective. And then the sisters, of course, had theirs. Other people had theirs, lay people, other priests, bishops. But then when we had all this testimony, we had oral testimony of 113 people, plus written testimony of other people who wouldn't have enough to say to make them do the 263 questions. So
263 questions.
That was the questionnaire. Yeah, if you were oral witness. Now, most people couldn't answer them all because the first part is about her early life, and mother died at 87, so she outlasted most of her contemporaries. Mm. But there was one, for example, a cousin in Skopje. She was able to say something. So there was very few who could talk about mother's early life. So we had this wealth of information. Many other people who wrote their testimonies, not in oral testimony. So there's just a wealth of material. So altogether, I brought, when the diocesan inquiry, the first phase was finished, I brought about 35,000 pages, 81 volumes of 450 pages of volume. So, which was good because, you know, if people would have said, oh, well, we'll just canonize mother, and that's, we all know that, you know, people say, well, what do you do? That seemed like such a slam dunk case. There was going to be no doubt about it. But it was good because the process allowed us to gather right from the beginning, so when things were still fresh and available, all this wealth of material that now for decades and perhaps centuries people will be able to delve into.
But looking back at it, I mean, did something stand out? Did something surprise
you?
Yeah,
I think, well, when we finished the positio, and I remember saying, well, seeing all of it together was impressive, to see everything in whole life, and then, wow, this was Mother Teresa. And so in a certain way, you know, I knew Mother better after than when she was alive, because she was such a public person, but still managed to keep many things still private. And so that was one thing. And then the second thing was the darkness. And that to me is, if you want to, you know, the single most heroic aspect of her life, besides charity, which all the saints has to have. And she's identified with charity. But the darkness is to me the most, apart from that, is the most heroic aspect of her life.
Mm. In fact, you published Mother Teresa, Come Be My Light, the private writings of the saint of Calcutta. Now, that was a collection of letters that she wrote to her spiritual advisors over decades of her life, almost all of which had never been made public before. I believe because
they weren't even known before.
Right, but also she didn't really want
them. She didn't want
them.
No, she wanted, but, you know, I say thank you, thanks to the Jesuits, the early Jesuits, Father Van Exem, Father Neuner, Archbishop Perrier was a Jesuit. So thankfully, they had the sense of keeping them, because they understood better than Mother Teresa herself that it wasn't just her personal experience, nor was it just something negative that should be hidden or something, but rather, you know, it's a very important part of our charism that Mother Teresa lived perhaps in an intensity and length that maybe none of us will ever even approach. But so really, thankfully, that they didn't listen to Mother Teresa, even though Father Van Exem said to one of the Jesuits who was living with him, who told one of our priests, that he had 5 boxes of material and he only kept 1. Mm. So there's stuff that
there's
were
still
destroyed.
Stuff out there.
No, they were destroyed.
Oh,
so,
okay.
But he said, I tried to keep the essential things. So from that period of time, most of the real important stuff is in the book. Hmm. Come Be My Light. And I think part of why everyone was so shocked, you know, people would say, okay, Mother Teresa did wonderful work for the poor, you know, great. But then we read these letters, and then, as you know, not in the book, and another article after I wrote, you know, you have Father Cantalamessa, you have Harvey Egan, Jesuit expert on the mystical tradition, saying she's one of the great mystics of the Church. And you say, wow. Maybe. So she covered her simplicity, which I think she chose to be simple. She was very gifted, humanly speaking. She was intelligent, very practical, born teacher, organizer. She sang, beautiful voice. She played the instrument. She wrote poetry. In Coming My Light, there's a beautiful poem as she's on the boat leaving Ireland for India. So she had many gifts. But as she asked even the sisters, say the sisters who joined were very talented doctors and nurses and others. But they were supposed to live simply as all the other sisters, so she herself did it. Mm. So that's why I think she disguised the profundity of her holiness by the exterior simplicity of her life and of her words even.
When you were reading these letters for the first time, what was going through your mind? How did they make you feel?
Okay.
To discover this about her?
Well, actually, because one of the sisters, most of these letters came from Calcutta and the Archbishop's house or the Jesuit archives in Calcutta. So they came to Rome here in the Prima Valle, and the sister, said, we have these letters. So I took the letters, and because she had indicated they were very special, so I said, wait a minute. I took that letter and I went to the chapel because I wanted to not just read it as if I'm reading some letter. So I went into the chapel of the house and I read the letter and was like, oh, wow. Now, I don't remember if I cried or not, but later when we were working in Calcutta, I would read some of these letters to the sisters in Mother House, and many of them knew Mother personally. And they were really crying because you're reading them and it's your mother, and then you're hearing this and you have a sense of how she's suffering, and it's like, really? And then there's the personal letters that she wrote in late 50s, Father Picacci and her confessor. Part of the trial was that she could, even those who, very few who knew, and so Father Picacci, she wrote, Jesus forced me to tell you about this interior experience. So part of it was that even with the persons that knew, the priest who knew, she couldn't speak of it. She write to Father Neuner, who was in Pune near Bombay, Mumbai now. Don't bother coming to Mumbai from Pune because I have nothing to say. I can't say, even if she wants to, that's the experience. Then Father Picacci has the idea, then if it's hard to express yourself, maybe try writing directly to Jesus. So he saved a couple of those letters that are in the book, Come Be My Light. And, I'm willing to go through this for all eternity even, for your pleasure, or others can benefit from this. So she's like, she said, if it were possible. So I guess she knew it wasn't possible. But that's just the magnanimity, that great soul in this. Is just tremendous. I want to satiate your thirst with every drop of blood that you can find in me. It's like, wow. So that's why when you're reading this or hearing is that sisters were crying in Mother House, because that's like, if that's not love for God, then I don't know what is.
Brings our program to a close today. Thank you for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. Laudator Jesus Christus.